You're listening to The Healthy Sensitive with Leah Burkhart. Welcome back to The Healthy Sensitive. We've been talking this, I guess I'll say this month, like the theme has been in the realm of purpose, meaning, and how it can vitalize us or maybe revitalize us when we feel down. But I do think it's important to also address maybe the shadow side of living a purposeful and meaningful life, because there always is one. No matter what the element is that you might be talking about. So it's like, exercise is great for you. Oh, but over-exercise, not so great. You know, even foods that are theoretically healthy, it's like, fruit is good for you. Too much gives you the tchotchkes. So there's always a shadow side to all the things. Well, what I wanted to go into a little bit is, as I mentioned earlier, the shadow side of purpose, which, as far as I can tell, seems to be workaholism. Now, I was thinking to myself, workaholism, that must be a uniquely Leah thing. I can't imagine other HSPs have this problem. I imagine other HSPs are probably better at setting limits. Or maybe it's just a uniquely sensitive / sensation seeker thing. Maybe that's it. So I went into all of these, I was just kind of walking around in the world imagining that I was a unique little snowflake. And nope, turns out not so much. In fact, my propensity toward workaholism, and any of the isms, I am a little reluctant to get a little too enthusiastic about, because, you know, must everything be an ism? Having said that, though, I do know when something that one moment is nourishing turns into something that is no longer supportive to me. I know what that shift feels like. And so for some people, you know, in some cases, I feel like alcoholism, it's externally apparent when someone goes from, oh, look, they're having a glass of wine with dinner and they're able to detect all of the subtle nuances in the taste changes of this glass of wine. How lovely. And suddenly this person maybe is drinking 2-3 bottles a night and can't seem to get through the day without drinking. There's an image we've conjured as a culture around that. I think it's harder in many ways to pinpoint when does passion for one's work turn into workaholism. Well, I think Alanis Morissette said it best. She said, because she's, you know, come out at being kind of a recovering workaholic. And she said, I know the difference because it's in my body. I know when something that was in, from words apparently are hard right now. I know what it feels like when I'm in flow. And I know what it feels like when I shift into a different mode that almost feels like a kind of mania. And I figured, well, if that's something that she feels, and it's something I can identify with, I wonder if this is, you know, a thing. So I can't, of course, say whether it's quote unquote a thing for all HSPs. But in doing some research, there does seem to be a connection or a propensity toward workaholism in this cohort, which made me very sad on the one hand, but also kind of sadistically happy, because at least I'm not alone. It was one of those classics, the classic stories of, you know, misery loves company. Like, oh, thank goodness I'm not the only one. So why might it be true that a highly sensitive person may have a propensity for workaholism? Well, to begin with, highly sensitive people are deep processors. So they tend to analyze and reflect on their work deeply, considering all possible angles and outcomes, which can prolong the amount of time they would spend on a task. So it may be that when faced with a task, once that task gets its claws into us, and it's like, ooh, now I'm intrigued and I want to understand this thing from every angle, we may just lose time. Now, that might not be workaholism. Maybe that's just flow. But this thoroughness can lead to longer and longer hours spent working as we keep striving for perfection and exhaustive completion of tasks. So this is now, I mean, I love what Brené Brown says about perfectionism. There's no such thing as healthy perfectionism, says she. There is healthy striving. And she didn't say these next words exactly, but the way I'm paraphrasing her work would be to say that healthy striving often sounds like I wonder, and perfectionism often sounds like I should. So why might we be prone to perfectionism? Well, we'll get to that later. So in any way, in the realm of the deep processing element, our deep processing can also make it difficult for us to disentangle from work as our minds continue to dwell on work-related issues outside of working hours. So we're off the clock. Everyone is okay with this. So I'm not even talking about some tyrannical boss that's making us work after hours. I'm talking about the tyrannical brain that's not done thinking about the thing and needs a few hours to continue chewing on something. So it's not even necessarily that we're doing this thing consciously. HSPs might overprepare for assignments or meetings to ensure we've considered every possible detail, increasing our workload and stress. And that deep processing trait can also lead to overthinking and second-guessing, making it difficult to make decisions quickly and prompting additional work to address perceived or real gaps. So part of why we might be prone to workaholism may just be due to the fact that we are natural deep processors and we're of the type where if we're going to do a thing, we may as well do it right, which if we're going to have to do a thing right, might take more time. And so then that might lead us into a realm where we're working beyond what is a healthy threshold. But then it's not just about the work itself. It's not just that dopamine kick we're seeking, because we tend to have a rank high in empathy and responsiveness to others. So HSPs are keenly aware of our colleagues' emotions and our needs, which can drive us to take on more work in an effort to support or help others. We may have difficulty setting boundaries, and we will be talking all about boundaries later on in the next coming months. Don't you worry. But when we don't have boundaries, which in short, is simply the ability to say what is and isn't okay, it leads us to accept more tasks than perhaps we can handle. But to be fair, it may not just be that we're accepting these tasks because someone asked it of us. It can also be that we have accepted the task because we don't want to say no. Highly sensitive people, especially if they're also sensation seekers, may be coming from a place of joy and enthusiasm and passion. I'm so excited about this thing. I want to do this thing. And also this one. Oh, and also this. And also this. Oh yeah, and this too. And so this leads us to having difficulty saying no, not because we are being pushed, but maybe because we feel like we're following breadcrumbs. We also have a desire to maintain harmony and avoid conflict, which might push us to overcommit or take on work that others would avoid. A really silly example of this, this was a suite mate, so, you know, a sizable apartment complex, but there were six women in one physical location, and I had no problem doing dishes, and there were some people who seemed to have problems doing them, and so I would just do them, and I legitimately didn't. I don't even remember feeling resentful about it, because it was meditative and probably scratched my need to get something done without having to think hard itch. And then I had to leave for a quarter because a family member was ill. I came back to visit and it was like a war zone had commenced. And I come in here and two out of the six other five, excuse me, people said, Leah, we had no idea that you were basically doing all of this work and keeping us from conflict. And it occurred to me that it's true. I don't like unnecessary conflict. I'm willing to do conflict, but not unnecessarily. And it's a lot of energy, and I'd rather not. So it was just easier to do the dang dishes. And all I had to do was leave, and suddenly it's like, oh my. I'm not saying my approach was right or that theirs was wrong. I'm just saying my approach made for a whole lot of lubrication in the social dynamics of that particular apartment complex. And my leaving meant that there wasn't someone to be harmonizing and like lubricating things via dishes. And so the problem that was more work that I was taking on just for the sake of harmony. Highly sensitive people also might feel a strong sense of duty and responsibility, which can compel us to take work, you know, take on extra hours because we perceive it as an obligation. This also leads into, like, in the realm of relationships, we seek validation. So work achievements can become a significant source of self-esteem for highly sensitive people, which can drive us to seek perfectionism in our tasks. We might equate professional success with personal, like, worth. Feedback and praise from superiors and peers can be particularly reinforcing for highly sensitive people, motivating us to do excessive work. And fear of criticism, on the other hand, or negative evaluation, can drive HSPs to do overwork as we preempt or avoid outcomes of criticism. So we can see our work accomplishments as a way to gain respect and admiration, which then makes us feel like we're thriving, especially in a world where we're in the minority most of the time. It's a way for us to kind of leverage our strengths and become positive outliers. Well, then what about overstimulation? Wouldn't we naturally get to that place at a certain point where even our desire for harmony in our relationships at work and our passion and depth of processing, wouldn't there be this threshold? Because one of the traits of sensitivity is a propensity toward overstimulation, and we don't do well. But counterintuitively, focusing intensely on work can provide a structured and controllable environment, which can reduce unpredictable external stimuli. Want to avoid having to say yes or no to a lot of social entanglements and engagements? Just say that you're busy with work. Who would possibly question you? You're trying to start a business. I'm not saying this is personal, of course. This isn't me. I never would do that. Work can serve as a retreat from social interactions and environments that might be overwhelming. So I don't have to say no or yes or worry about that party. I can't go. I have work. Being engrossed in work can help someone like me avoid dealing with personal or emotional issues that might be more distressing. So I had an experience where I gave myself more time. I unplugged, went traveling with a friend, came back, intentionally gave myself a couple of extra days once I got back to relax, because I realize that's helpful for us HSP. I was feeling very smug. Thank you very much. I'm like, look at me go with my building in a nice buffer of time after my vacation. I'm so good. But then I had this emotional upheaval happen inside of me. And I realized, oh, I think I'm like, there's been some backlog of emotional gunk that I've just been shelving in the back for the right time to process. Well, apparently my body said, glad you took some days off, kiddo. Guess what you get to do? So when I'm overworked, I don't have to be thinking about emotional elements in my life that are complex. I can just put that on pause. There's some predictability and routine, and that predictability and routine in work can be really comforting. It can be a sense of security and control. I can't control a lot in my life, but dang it all, I can control how many emails I check off and get out of my inbox. And we might prefer to stay later at work because it might be quieter, less stimulating during when it's peak hours. And finally, my favorite, fear of failure. Highly sensitives often have a high personal set of standards. Not I, of course. I'm super go with the flow. Lol. And we might possibly overwork ourselves to ensure that every detail is perfect. And this helps us mitigate any risk of error. I will say here, though, I've gotten much better at not being perfect, and I've fully embraced the done is better than perfect. Evidence, you know, I state my case. I'm doing this podcast at 9 o'clock at night on a Thursday when I really, really wanted to be able to do a podcast episode earlier this week, but I kept putting it off because I thought, but I want it to be perfect. And then finally, I just said, well, if I keep waiting for it to be perfect, I'll never put out a podcast, which is useful to exactly zero humans. So I am getting better. But the intense need to keep going, keep creating, part of that is a fear of failure. So there's this intense emotional reaction that we have to failure. And most people don't like it anyway. I don't know a lot of people who are just thrilled with the idea of failing. But for us, because we feel things more intensely, that fear can be magnified and it can be a strong motivator for highly sensitive people to put in the extra effort and avoid any potential mistakes, because that's icky. And then also anticipating negative outcomes can lead highly sensitive to work harder as a preemptive measure to ensure our success. So I'm going to anticipate every possible piece of feedback someone could give, and then just go ahead and work myself to the bone to make sure that they can't, like, I find it first. So all of this might be very helpful in understanding what the connection is, but now the question is, what can we do about it? So I'll kind of go through each of these five elements, I guess, that I went through and give some tips. So with deep processing, one element is time management. So allocate really specific times for deep thinking and set limits to avoid overanalyzing. There's a technique I love, and it's the Pomodoro technique, where a timer goes off. I think it's every 20 minutes, you get a 10-minute break. You can structure it however you like, but it's basically this idea that you set a timer to do some deep work, and when the timer goes off, you get up from your desk and you stop. You can also create green zones in your time where you're intentionally choosing to have time where you do nothing. You can time manage. You can break tasks down, so break work into smaller, manageable tasks to prevent overwhelm. We can set clear boundaries. You know, we'll be talking about that later, but basically establish a specific time to end the workday and stick to it. So basically, this is a boundary with oneself. Having a mindfulness practice and delegating out things and trusting that someone else might be able to help you. So this would help with the deep processing element. It's helping to clear the head. It's helping to leverage it as a strength and remove the potential for it to become a liability. As it relates to the empathy piece, well, learn to say no, because if you never say no, your yes means nothing. Prioritizing self-care and coming from a place of empathy. If you don't take care of yourself, you're useless to others. Set emotional boundaries, so distinguishing between your emotions and those of others. Seek supportive relationships, so surround yourself with understanding people who respect those boundaries and can provide support. And then reflect on your accomplishments, like regularly reflecting on what you've achieved, remembering that your value isn't solely based on how much you help others. So a lot of times we think self-care is good because it makes you able to care for others. Self-care is also good because it's just good. You don't need it to only ever be for care of others. So there's that. So now in the element, this is kind of related, the seeking validation piece. One strategy can be to focus on cultivating internal validation. So a sense of self-worth that's independent of external achievements. I am worthy of being here. How do I know? Because I am here. Balanced feedback. So seeking constructive feedback regularly, but not excessively, and understanding that perfection isn't attainable and not even desirable. Frankly, who wants to manage an employee who's perfect? What are you going to do as the manager then? You're never going to be able to help that person. Ugh. It's kind of like sitting on a couch that has that clear plastic thing over it. It's not going to get any stains, but who wants to sit on that couch? Just saying. Having a diversity of interests. So developing hobbies and interests outside of work to build a sense of achievement and validation in various areas of life. Various areas. Wow. Anyway. Avoidance. So in the realm of overstimulation. So one thing that can help is creating a calm workspace. But of course, you don't want to make it too calm because then you'll never want to leave. Structuring in breaks, taking regular planned breaks to step away from work and recharge. Having infusing your day with physical activity. This helps with managing stress and improving focus. And then having some calming techniques that you can apply, such as deep breathing or progressive muscle relaxation during those work hours. And as for the fear of failure element, realistic goal setting. So set achievable goals that challenge you without overwhelming you. Embrace mistakes. Cultivate a growth mindset where mistakes are viewed as learning opportunities rather than failures. Fun fact, highly sensitive people seem to learn from their mistakes faster than the average person. This is part of the upside of being sensitive. Downside is we're sensitive to feedback. The upside is we're sensitive to feedback. Getting peer support. So share your fears and experiences with trusted peers or mentors who can provide perspective and support. Professional development. So engaging in training and development to build confidence in your abilities and reduce fear of failure. And finally, self-compassion. Practicing self-compassion, acknowledging your efforts, and treating yourself kindly regardless of the outcome. So, you know, by understanding the dynamics involved and what may lead a highly sensitive person toward workaholism, it can help us better navigate our work habits help us seek balance and cultivate strategies to maintain our well-being while honoring our natural tendencies and while embracing our desire to do things that we love. And by implementing these strategies, we can better manage those work habits and prevent workaholism while, again, leaning into the things that bring us joy. We can continue to do things that excite us and stay in flow rather than, you know, we can do the work rather than the work doing us. So hope that this is helpful. And if you would like to have more information of this kind, and or you want to connect with other people who may be struggling with some of these things, I'm going to go ahead and put some links in the show notes. There's an online community you are welcome to join. I have a meetup group with plenty of free events if you want to connect. And I'll also be putting social media plugs in. All right. Have a wonderful, wonderful, well, right now I'm recording this at night, but I'll just say have a wonderful wherever you happen to be in your day. Okay. Bye.